This is Diane Bruning.
Hi, Diane. Good morning. I also know that Alicia Miller is on the line. Anyone else?
Corinne and Tucson, I'm here.
Perfect. And Andrea. Okay, perfect. Okay, so before we take roll call and officially start, I just wanted to, this is Rebecca, I just wanted to remind everyone to check their inbox. A few documents were added to the calendar invite right before the meeting began, and so if you go into your inbox and re-accept the calendar invite, you will have access to the documents that we'll be discussing today. And please let me know if you don't see that, and we can fix that in any way. As we begin, we're going to call the meeting to order. It is now 10:09, and we will start with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, and following that, we will do a roll call, an official roll call of the committee members. We'll start with Diane Bruning.
Diane Bruning, present.
Corinne Plummer.
Here.
Kelly Anderson. Not present, I believe. Andrea Weck-Robinson.
Present.
And Alicia Miller.
Present.
So we have four out of the five committee members, which means we have quorum and we may proceed. And I'll hand it over to Christy.
Okay. As she said, as Rebecca said, there are a few things that were emailed toward the last few minutes before we got started. So I just want to make sure everyone does have a chance to pull those up because they will be important as we talk through cost and procedures today. So I just want to confirm, does everybody have those documents up and available?
Diane, I don't have a calendar invite, so I don't have the documents to look for.
I can email them to you directly, Diane. I'm so sorry. I don't understand why we sent a calendar invite to everyone, and I'm so sorry that you haven't received it. I'll go ahead and send that right away. Anyone else?
Yeah, thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, great. I will be right back if you want to continue.
Sure. Okay. So the first thing that we kind of attached there at toward the last minute was the AEP committee, our notes from November 15th meeting. And I just wanted to attach those so that you have kind of a reference for the last meeting that we had as a reminder. I know it's been a few weeks and everybody's in a turkey coma at this point. So you'll see starting with number two on the most recent notes that we attached, there's going to be some red writing. And essentially what I did was any additions we made to what we voted on, the decisions we made, I added those notes in red so that everyone could see exactly what was discussed very clearly. So we don't necessarily have to go over those unless anyone has a question, but I did just want to have them available for you to make sure that our understandings were the same. So does everybody have that?
Okay, I'm looking, but I need you to refer to the name of a document or something so I know what you're talking about, because I'm lost. I've got emails and I've got documents, but I don't know what you're talking about.
Rebecca's going to be sending them directly to you. I'm not sure what she named the AEP committee notes, but that's what they were. They were from, it'll say at the very top, it says AEP committee, and it says November 15th, 2016.
Corinne, this is Alicia. It's the one with all the numbers. It's 20111.
All right. I got you. So we have three documents. It sounds like we've got three documents. Is that correct? We have one with the date, all the numbers, and the date. We have something that's called cost options AEP.pdf.
Correct.
We have ESA procedures.
And that's it.
And then we also have a notice of public meeting, and then we also have the law.
Correct.
The first one I talked about are the three that you sent. Mm-hmm. That we are reviewing.
So this should just be the two new ones that you see there, the
correct.
AEP cost options and then
not the ESA procedure, because we've already done that.
Okay, awesome.
Okay. So you have everything then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so with the AEP committee.
I believe so. You have to tell me. I don't know what you sent.
It sounds like to me you have everything.
It does. It sounds like you have. You're just looking at, Corinne, just look at the two new pieces, the AEP cost option and the AEP committee.
Okay,
do you have those
that.
Two things?
Yeah, I do.
Okay,
I just have to know what I'm looking for.
So there are notes on the AEP committee. There are notes in red. And the only reason why I attached that for you is so you can see that I took the notes from what we discussed the last time, and I included those so you could see everything that we decided the last time we met. And that all starts under number 2. So that is just for your reference, and if no one has any questions, then we won't really spend much time going over that.
Just to interrupt, this is Rebecca one more time. I'm so sorry. Diane, were you able to receive the document? Oh, great.
Perfect.
I got them. Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
So with that, I will go ahead and move on to cost, because I'm guessing this is going to take up a little bit of our time, quite a bit of our time, I think. So I went through, and I actually got some questions answered from our procurement staff, so I have some answers to RFP questions that came up the last time. And then my staff and I did some research on cost to kind of get some options and some ideas so everyone could see what the actual rates are and have a better idea of some options that we actually do have. And before I go into that very heavily, one major change after speaking with, I'm going to go through the RFP information first. So after discussing with our procurement department, I let him know what we proposed, that we would require teams of two to respond to the RFP. Now, the concern that our procurement department had with that was that our likelihood for getting responses for requiring individuals to team up in a team of two is going to be extremely low. So they had another suggestion for us. So they said what we could do is essentially have awards made to specifically SPED teachers and then awards made to our school and or licensed psychologists. So you would have a list of approved SPED teachers and a list of approved psychologists, and then the parent then would have the choice of picking one teacher, mm-hmm. one psychologist, any of your choice, and in the RFP we would write specifications that say that they have to cooperate together.
Okay.
So that would be in there, but you get to choose who you want. So if one year you like one psychologist mm-hmm. but not the teacher,
right.
you could change that.
That's what we were going to talk to you about today too.
Okay,
so
perfect.
So
it kind of gives you more options mm-hmm. and it gives us a better opportunity to get responses.
Yeah.
So that is what they've proposed. So rather than having a team of two, we would have SPED teachers respond and psychologists respond.
Perfect.
And part of the reason for that too is because then they can be sole proprietors.
Mm-hmm.
If they team up as two, then we get into other issues and the likelihood of people responding when it's going to take so much out of their time and out of their pockets is less likely.
Yes.
So,
I think that's perfect.
Does anyone have any questions about that? Do we agree with that? Are we okay with proceeding in that manner?
Andrea?
Just saying, Brennan, I agree.
Perfect.
Corinne, do you agree? Corinne?
Yes, I'm really proud that Andrea and I talked with a couple other parents, and they came up with that idea, too. So that's great.
And then is it Alicia? Did she?
Alicia.
Alicia.
Okay,
awesome.
As well.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Wow, that was
and we can move on back to cost.
Awesome.
Okay, so then everything I've structured with cost is with that in mind, which is why I wanted to go over that first. Okay, so let's start with there's a spreadsheet, and I apologize, I didn't name it, but it has the positions, and it has blue and
peach.
Like an orange or peach and red at the top, and it indicates the positions and the average salaries. Does everyone have that in front of them?
Yep. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So what we did was go through and we went and just did research on ranges for SPED teachers and for clinical psychologists. So you'll see our blue is our average, and I color-coded just to make this easy. The blue is the average salary and then their average hourly. The peach is the lowest in the range, salary and hourly, and then the red is the highest in the range. So the numbers we're going to be looking at today is going to be the average.
Okay.
So that's everything the work that I've done for coming mm-hmm. up with the cost options is all based on the average. Okay. Before we get into it, I did include some factors that we need to consider.
Okay.
As I was trying to figure out these rates and what makes sense, and also what we can explain at the end of the day when they ask us how we calculated. So you do have to consider market rate for like services. So if you look at psychologists, IEP facilitators, and mediators, everything is between the 400 to 650 range, okay? So that is what our market is paying for like services. And then we have, there's kind of an opportunity.
Is that like one time or an hour? Or
that's per case. So however long it takes that person, mm-hmm. that's what they get paid per case. Good question.
And do you know how much time those cases are taking? Do we have any idea? Because that's part of what we were trying to figure out with our cases as well.
Honestly, it's going to be that average between the 4 to 7 hours.
Mm-hmm. I talked to two psychologists, okay. our school gal, and then a mentor, mm-hmm. and they said 3 to 6 hours.
Okay.
But they said probably a good one's going to spend 6.
Uh-huh.
Because it takes time, and then the time to talk to the family. So that was just two outside
perfect
people. So that I thought that was right within range of what we were thinking anyway.
Okay. Then we have the opportunity cost-based consideration. So when you're looking at how consultants determine their rates, so I just went and did some research on that last night to figure out what is it that they do. So if we're looking at the average hourly rate for teachers, $25, and for a licensed clinical or school psychologist, $30 an hour, the standard practice as a consultant is that you double your rate to factor in your time to respond, your prep work, follow-up, profit margin, etc. So doubling it is a very standard thing, which is perfectly in line with the market rate mm-hmm. for like services. So I just wanted you to see two different methods for how I got where I mm-hmm. came to. Okay. Then looking at, and I do know we discussed 3 to 6 hours the last time, but one thing I did want to bring up and why I think it should change and shift potentially a little is that this includes now not just the initial contact with the parents, emails back and forth to discuss the process, looking at the data, developing the report, follow-up questions, meeting with the parent at the end. We now have also included, because we're doing a list of teachers and a list of psychologists, there has to be time for them to get together and connect yeah. because we're talking about people mm-hmm. who potentially have never connected.
Right.
So I bumped the average hours per case to the 4 to 7 to mm-hmm. consider that additional time that it's going to take, because typically this would be team members.
Right.
When we considered this initially, team members that are familiar with one another, right. who've worked together.
Right.
And at this point, these are going to be team members who have not.
Mm-hmm.
So that is how I determined the average hours per case at 4 to 7.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the average hours per case 4 to 7 with that calculation actually matches up with the opportunity cost breakdown and the market rate. So it gets us to where we should be for rates.
Okay.
So with that, we can move on to the AEP cost options. So there are kind of three options that I came up with. They are based on what we've talked about. The first one actually lowered the cost a little. So we'll just go through option one. That is the flat fee we discussed last time. So if you look at the breakdown, I took the average hourly, multiplied it by 2, because that's doubling their rate.
Mm-hmm.
So for a SPED teacher, that means they're getting paid $50 an hour. And for a clinical school psychologist, that is $60 an hour. And there is a difference in rate, obviously, because there is a difference in training and technical skills.
Absolutely.
Then I took it by the...
I have a question about psychologists. 60 is doubled from 30 per hour. That's too low, I think.
Well, the research spoke for itself. So that first sheet that we looked at, that is the average low and high ranges for school and clinical psychologists. Actually, school psychologists were...
You've got SPED teacher average salary. You weren't looking at Arizona because our $50,000 is with benefits at 20%. It's closer to 38 to 42 probably on special ed teacher annual salary. Your hourly rate, if their hourly rate's probably in the neighborhood of 30 to 35 an hour. So doubling it to 60 or 50, okay. But clinical psychs, they're close. I have people making 55 an hour, not double at 60. That's 55's on the high end, I agree, but I'm just from a school-based, maybe clinical people or more, that seems too low on the psych, but that's my input.
I mean, that's the average. Are they getting paid? I can't really speak to the ones who are getting paid at your district, but when you look at just statistics across the United States, that is the average salary.
I'm shocked about that, but okay. I'm very surprised to hear that. You must have been looking at Michigan for SPED teachers, because they're Arizona.
We were looking at Arizona statistics.
Oh, you said across the nation. Sorry. I'm just saying, I think it's too low on psychs if you want psychs.
Well, the thing is, you'd have to consider, if we start going above what the data tells us and any higher, then it is going to raise those rates. So,
well, let me just make sure I understand. $50 an hour on option one, $50 for the SPED teacher. You have doubled their average hourly rate from 25 to 50. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, and clinical psych, their average hourly rate is $30, and it's doubled to 60.
Correct.
I still think psychs are too low, but they're not double what teachers make. And I know in districts, we probably have more of them than there are out there privately, and I don't know what kind of district people would want to do this on the side, possibly, but I'm just trying to get something out there that's going to get some RFP responses, because what you don't want is too few responses. Okay.
That is true. But it does put us right around that range that we discussed this last time. So mm-hmm. unless we want to talk about, and I honestly wouldn't have anything to justify raising that dollar amount after looking at the data, we're actually paying, when you double it as a consultant, you're paying at the higher end of the range if you look at that scale that I gave you guys. So we're paying over what their high range is, which makes sense because they're a consultant, and that is the benefit to being a consultant. You can do that. You should do that. It's standard to do that. But it does become then higher than the range. So unless some other data can be provided that we haven't been able to find, I can't. At the end of the day, we have to be able to explain the calculation all the way through and our justification for why we landed where we did. So
okay, so maybe, this is Diane, on salary and average hourly on the very first document, possibly the problem, and maybe it's not a problem, lies in average salary $61,000 for the school psych, but to do hourly, did you divide that by 365 days, or how did the hourly come to be?
I divided it by the hours, and I don't have my notes with how I did it.
I just want to make sure it's the right number of hours, because a school psychologist would work about 202 days of 8 hours for $61,000.
Okay, let me look at this really quick.
The Google search I just did doesn't even give you the hours. It just says clinical psychologists earn an average hourly wage. Hourly wage at 67. Hourly wage to start at 1740 and go up to 4219. And then they give the 61,710 per year, and then they give the range at 36 and the 87.
So you said that so average hourly.
So I don't know if you did the math or just use this office.
You're on to something, because you said average hourly is 42. That's more along the right lines to me, but
that's just like an
average
2 seconds.
Psychologist yearly.
But you're taking it by the time that they would work like 9 months in a school. But a clinical psychologist wouldn't be on that. They would be the standard hours for the year.
We need to be in the middle.
Does that make sense? They would be the standard days for the year.
Yeah,
So we'd have to find.
Higher.
They're cutting out.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think clinical psychs, their numbers are going to be higher, and I'm surprised it's $30 an hour. I don't know a clinical psych anywhere that works for 30. I can't
believe
it.
Right, well, it's not 30.
It's 60. And we have the average for Arizona.
So you doubled the teacher salary at 25 an hour to 50, but you didn't double the psychologist 60 to 120 an hour?
No, we doubled it from the 30 to 60.
30.
Because if you, so the concern you're going to have is, as a consultant, you're already doubling what an average rate is. So if you start with the highest part of that scale and then double, you're really talking about inflating this cost quite a bit, which is why I went with the average cost, because if you go with an average salary. So if you go with the average salary, then double, because the doubling is inflating it, then you're coming at least still somewhat of a reasonable cost. I get that we want to, make this attractive for the RFP, but we're right also trying to simultaneously consider.
Median middle is 57, right there.
Yeah.
Arizona, yeah. Which I'll take a screenshot and email that to her.
So. If there is any other hard data that you have that you can send my way that tells us that these rates are, way drastically off, then I can look at that. But at this point, all the data that we have and that we've looked to, and I think that even Andrea just pulled up, kind of confirms the average salaries.
What I can do is email two licensed clinical psychs that I know. They're in private practice. I know them well because I supervised them at Chandler. I'm going to email them and ask them what their average hourly rate is. That's all I can give you. I have zero clinical doctoral level psychs in Higley, zero. And the two that I'm emailing were the only two in Chandler. Those are big, that's a big district. So, the pool will be smaller, but, can I ask a question about clinical psych, school psychs, does that imply a doctorate, or what kind of license? Does school psychologist certificate in Arizona through ADE count?
I'm sorry, say that again. I don't think, if you're a school psychologist, you're a school... I'm not an expert on, I'll just say right now, I'm not an expert on the license versus school clinical psychologist. We can certainly pull up the qualifications for both, and that way we can discuss that a little further. But I certainly
not a school clinical. It's only school psychology.
Right. So I'm saying school versus clinical. So I can pull
up. I think we could pull. It could be either.
Yep. Right. Exactly. It could be either. So when we do the RFP, we will look up specifically what a school psychologist is versus what a licensed psychologist is.
Okay. Yeah, the terminology is licensed or certified school psychologist.
Right, I understand that. I just have it abbreviated here for our sake.
Okay.
The only other thing, this is Alicia, the only other thing I'm thinking might be worth a look is what contract psychologists charge. And I know you did the double.
We did, but that's on the first sheet that we looked at. So clinical psychologist, the flat fee for their services on that first page, that is about $450.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what they charge.
For academic only.
Academic only. Okay.
Okay.
Which
works out to what in hour? That was 4 to 7 hours, you said?
4 to 7 hours, yeah.
Because you just have to consider,
$75 an
hour. They're not doing the actual, they're reading the work.
Right.
They're not doing the actual evaluation,
right.
Which is why you're cutting it in half and you're giving them the middle. I mean, we have it, right? That's the average.
That's a good point. That's
because
good point.
It's not exactly we're using like services because we need a reference point. But to Andrea's point, we do have to remember that this is a different service altogether. We're creating something that has never existed.
What they're actually doing. That's true.
Right.
And it does make sense to me because I'll share with you guys just on a personal side. This is Alicia. I do contract work, and I do. My rates are typically 65 to 70, but I am for a favor for a friend who's a neighboring district director. I'm doing 60 an hour. But that's basically a favor, and also because there's a lot of just this type of work where I'm really reviewing. I'm not necessarily having to go out.
You're not
out
doing
and
the work you're
stuff.
Reviewing. That's
what I'm trying to point out, that the $60 hourly is not the bump for the collaboration. It's not doubling the hourly.
Well, the bump for the collaboration doesn't have to do with the hourly rate. That has to do with the hours. we're bumping the average hours from 3 to 6 to 4 to 7. That is completely separate from the rate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously it goes into a calculation together, but one is not necessarily dependent on upon the other, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So let's because I know there's going to be a lot of, let's get through the three options and then we can kind of circle back. But all I can tell you is even looking it up again on our phones just now,
we all agree.
I'm not seeing an average that is different than the data we provided. So I think if there is a higher rate we need to consider, then I need to see that evidence and data so that we have something to justify it. At the end of the day, that's the most important thing. We need to be able to explain how we got to the rate we got to. So we would need data and evidence to support that. So if you do have anything, definitely send it my way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Can I ask what is SoCanoe.com that was our source for these hourly wages in Arizona?
I'm sorry?
I'm looking at the source that you had for average clinical psychologist wage. What is that site? S-O-K-N.
I don't have them in front of me, and I didn't provide any sources.
I just looked it up on Google. It's just all I put in was average clinical psychologist yearly salary in Arizona, and that's the first thing that came up.
You could try this one, which actually pulls up our districts. It's www.salary.com, and it shows clinical psychologists and school psychologists and SPED teachers in Arizona at the different districts. And honestly, looking at those rates, they're right on point with what the averages we determined. And then you could do healthcarewages.org.
Mm-hmm.
That's another one that we were looking at.
Glassdoor.
And then glassdoor.com. Those are a few of them.
And typically the one that comes up first is usually the one, as far as the way that the internet goes, is the one that is used the most. Mm-hmm. And it's the one that comes up first. That's right. Why you use that one.
I'm going to go through the rest of these cost options with us tabling the hourly rate so that we can at least get through what the totals actually are, because I think at the end of the day, that's what we cared about more, at least the last meeting. And then we can circle back to this after I've kind of discussed it. So option one is the flat fee. SPED teachers, we have them at $50 an hour times 7 hours, because we said it's 4 to 7 hours. So we're gonna bill it at the top hours. So that comes out to $350 per case for a teacher, a SPED teacher. Then if you have a clinical or licensed school psychologist, they're $60 an hour times 7 hours. That comes out to $420 per case. So we're right in the market range.
Mm-hmm.
We're also right in the opportunity cost base, the method that consultants typically use to determine their rates. We're right within both of those. And that actually brings the evaluation total. So for a parent to get an AEP, the total for that is $770, which is actually $30 less than the $800 we came up with last time. Mm-hmm. Because we used specific averages and actually costed it out. So we came in a little bit under where we were. So that is $770.
I'm emailing one clinical psych who is a school psych, and she's saying they typically set on rates that range from $125 to $300, depending on the work.
Doing the evaluation.
And licensed for $75 an hour.
I'm going to need data, though. So we looked at averages across on the internet for Arizona averages, not just one particular site. So for the data we need something that is going to be a little more substantial to base this on.
Okay.
So we'll move on to option two. The other option we discussed was an actual hourly rate, so having an hourly rate. And if you do, when you look at kind of standards for contractors and charging hourly rates, when you go hourly, there are benefits and then there are downsides to doing that for a contractor and for a parent. You can't really put a minimum, you can't really put a maximum, because that essentially becomes the same thing as a flat fee, mm-hmm. and there's not as much of a benefit to the consultant to actually do this. So the benefit to this is that if it really only took them 2 hours for your child, mm-hmm. you're only going to get billed 2 hours. The downside to this is if it took them 12, and I do believe there are cases it could happen, yeah. depending on the parent and the questions and how much documentation is submitted and how organized it is, all those things need to be considered. Your cost could come up higher than your $770. So if you do an hourly rate, it is a possibility we could use the same rate of 50 and 60. They would invoice the parent at the end of it so they could see how the hours broke out. But there is that risk that, yes, while you can come in lower as a parent, it could come in higher. And then I use, like I said, the same rates that we determined would be the average doubled, because that is just a standard consultant rate. Option three, and this was after discussing with the procurement department, one of the options they said we had was we could, in the RFP, just say we want to do a flat rate and then let them tell us what they would charge. Again, there are pros and cons to this. The pro is that they could come in under our $770 because they want to get the contract. Mm-hmm. So, or some of the teachers specifically could come in under $350, and some of the psychologists, clinical or otherwise, could come in under $420, but some of them might come in higher. All of them might come in higher. We don't really know. So there is a little more risk to where that could land as well. So those are pretty much looking at kind of all of our options. Those are the routes that we can go. We can do a flat fee and decide that fee. We can say we want a flat fee and let the vendors decide mm-hmm. that fee. Mm-hmm. Or we can do an hourly rate and they would just charge you by the hour. Per person. So you have to think you're going to have two invoices, one from a teacher and one from mm-hmm. a psychologist if you do it that way.
I vote flat fee just because it is easier for everybody. And the person that's taking on the job knows what they're getting into and what they're going to be paid.
So option one.
I second that. This is Karen.
So option one?
Option one for Andrea.
Okay.
Diane, I say the same, flat fee.
Okay.
Just as a point of information, a clinical psychologist would have a doctorate. A school psychologist most likely has a master's. There is a difference in the two in terms of training, usually, and experience, though, but definitely training. Yep. But that's just a point of information.
Okay. Corinne, did you say you had a preference?
Yeah, I'm going with number one with the flat fee.
Perfect.
Knowing that the flat fee is still to be determined at this point.
We just have Alicia.
Alicia?
I think I would agree with the flat fee. I would just be hesitant on allowing the respondents to the RFP to name that simply because
I say we name it.
If they're going to come in very cheap, the quality might not
right.
be there.
Right.
You know, just in my experience, I want the best for the families, and mm-hmm. I just want to make sure that the people who
it has to be advantageous, mm-hmm. not mm-hmm. crazy advantageous, but mm-hmm. that seems market fair, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I have a second psychologist who's a doctoral clinical. She mm-hmm. says 100 to 150 an hour is the going rate.
For review.
Again, have you looked at statistics statewide? That's what we have to consider.
And are you talking to them about the actual evaluation or reading over documents?
Right.
Is it hourly?
Hourly is probably for an evaluation. That's what we're trying to get you to understand. Reviewing already done evaluations and making your
determination
is different than actually doing the evaluation, where they would definitely get the 100 to 150 an hour. But if they're right. just reviewing the documents, you know, they're going to take a cut in that pay because they're not doing the actual work. Do you understand what we're saying, Diane?
I understand very plainly. I have done 10,000 evaluation review of data meetings in my career. And I am telling you, it takes a lot to do that on complex kids.
But we're not doing
if
that.
If it's complex or not.
But we're not doing.
What do you mean?
They're not doing.
Some of the kids ESS are the most complex kids in our district.
Right, but they're not doing a full evaluation of the child. They're just reviewing.
They're doing a review of data. And what happens is it's not all there, so they have to talk to parent additionally or whatever.
But that's considered in the hours, not the rate.
It's not a simple matter, I'm just saying.
So if you can send me...
I'm just trying to make sure get a good response. I'm not into, and so I'm not evaluating all this. I'm on the committee to provide input. And I'm just telling you from my quick people that I can get, there's a difference between doctoral level and master's level people. And I think a master's level person could do it, so I think that needs to be in the RFP.
So,
and I think that might be more in line with $60 an hour, and that's fine.
But well, I actually looked up the rates for master's level versus the doctor's level, and I took the highest averages, which was the doctoral level. So those are still the rates I have. So I'll just say this one more time, and then we're going to have to move on because we have to get through procedures. If you have any statewide data and statistics that you can send me to show me that, I'm more than happy to we can look at that and talk about it. But I can't, without more data... I can't really adjust those scales because everything I'm seeing statewide is coming up to that amount. So I need something otherwise to show us that. And if we have that, then great.
What I would do is a survey of people who are licensed clinical psychologists.
We don't have the resources to do something of that nature.
Okay. Well, then.
Especially when the resources are there. There are tons of companies who have done the research, which is what we're...
Diane, and it's okay. If you want to do research and find something, you can send it our way, and we'll be happy to look at it. You know, if it's different than what we have, we'll be happy to look at different data. Just send it to either Christy or myself, we'll look at it. In the meantime, we can move forward for now to the next part.
Okay, so it looks like we all voted for the flat fee. Mm-hmm. As of right now, is everyone okay with the rate of $7.70 and the hourly rates unless we have some other data to go off of?
Andrea says yes.
Okay.
Corinne, how do you feel? Corinne?
I'm good with the $7.70. That's fine. I mean, it was close to $800, which is what we had already talked about. So it seems okay.
Perfect. Alicia?
I think that makes sense.
Perfect.
Okay.
Awesome. So we'll go with option one at that rate. Okay. So the next thing we need to look at, and this is a little more in depth, which I wanted to make sure we had time, is the we have a draft of our AEP procedures, so our policy and procedures for how internally the ESA department and the ESA staff are going to handle the AEP process to notify parents. And then everything to issuing contracts and all of that is in here. So if everybody has that attachment, do you want me to read it through, or do you want everybody kind of take a few minutes to read it themselves and then we can discuss if you have any questions?
I say we read it through and then
okay.
Do questions.
This is Corinne. I'm probably going to have to leave before we actually get into the conversation because I have another... commitment at 11.
Okay.
That's fine, Corinne. Thank you very much. We will still have quorum with three present members. So thank you.
Thanks,
okay.
Corinne.
Great. And then I'll read it. And if you could, is there any way to send out the notes?
I can.
With a little more advance?
Yeah, yes. I can get them to Rebecca and then she can...
Yes, and Corinne, you will also have access to the recordings of this meeting on our website, on the ADE policy website. You can.
Okay.
Okay.
And, you know, I was going to ask too. I know it's a public meeting, but in public meetings, do you have to physically come into a public meeting, or if somebody was interested, like any of the other parents or anything that can't come, are they allowed to call in, or is that?
Yes, they are allowed to call in. They would just have to adhere to the public meeting rules, which means that if they do have a comment, they'd have to wait for us to the end of the meeting
okay.
to. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I think what I noticed, one of the parents that we know through the ESA, parent group or whatever, they saw the meeting notice, and so they were just asking, and I just had no idea. glad that you brought that up because I wanted to ask and I forgot. So,
I see.
So if they want to come, it's just as if they are guests in the room where you are, and they just wait until the end for public comment.
You can give them my email address, and we can discuss options about attendance.
Okay. All right, great. All right, thank you.
Thank you. And are we still reviewing the draft right now? Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And just to make sure I'm looking at the same document, because I didn't see it in my, it was down below, Senate Bill 1457, we're reading through that?
No.
No, we're reading through the draft annual education plan policy and procedure. It's dated November 28th, 2016.
Hang on, I don't know if I have that one then.
And it's 3 pages.
I have AEP committee notes, November 15.
Right.
The public notice for this meeting.
Right.
The House Bill 1457, and I have 1129 notice of public meeting. That's all I've got.
Yeah, it's in there, Diane. There was 5 attachments that I sent you.
It says, yes. I think it's AEP, like policy and procedure, or AEP procedures, something along those lines is the title of the document.
The same document. I would send 1129 notice of public meeting. That's twice. I have 5 documents, but I don't have that one. Rebecca sent it to me.
Okay.
But I think I got the notice twice, so I don't have that one.
Okay, I will just step away from my to my desk to resend it to you, Diane. I'll be right back.
Thank you.
Oh, that's cost options. I can send it, Rebecca, from my.
That's fine.
I'll send it from my. Yep, here it is. That way you don't have to. Hang on.
Diane, I actually just resent it from the calendar.
Oh, perfect.
To you, so hopefully you can see it.
In the calendar.
Coming from A. Miller at FUSD.
So it would be in your inbox, Diane?
Yeah, in the inbox. Yeah, I just sent the calendar notice with all the attachments.
I'm watching.
I do at my desk. Thank you.
Did you receive it, Diane? I just want to make sure you got it.
Not yet.
Okay.
But our internet has been kind of slow today. Not yet.
Diane.
You can move ahead if you need to.
Let me see if I can try sending it to, just in case.
Diane.bruining at husd.org, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I sent it to.
There we go.
Okay. I'm watching.
Copy. Okay, Diane, I just sent it to you as well. Not through the calendar invite, just an email, because I know you've been having trouble with some of the calendar invites, so maybe that will help.
Right. There's something not working on that. Oh, Christy, there it is.
Perfect.
Got it in email.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Just in case there's two new ones. So we'll give everybody a few more minutes, and then Diane a few minutes to look through that, and then we can kind of start discussion. How's everyone doing? Are we mostly through it? Do we need any more time?
I'm through it.
This is Leisha. I'm through it as well.
Okay. Corinne? Oh, wait, she's gone.
She's gone. Just Diane.
Diane? I know you had it later, so.
I'm stuck on background and some of the definitions, so I didn't get through all of it, but I'm okay to get started.
Okay. So I'll just start with, does anyone have any questions in general about the procedures, any concerns? Any clarification required?
This is Diane. So what this policy and procedure would be going along with a bill that goes to the Arizona legislature regarding these after the fourth year of high school.
No. So,
is that right?
No. The background is all just to give you an understanding of just a basic understanding of what IDEA requires, then the passing, what ESA did with 12th grade students entering 12th grade or reaching 18 years of age, and prior to SB 1457, and then now that SB 1457 is in place, it's just saying that this now creates a mechanism for a process to allow kids to continue from 18 to 22. So it's just kind of giving the background of what it was to what it now will be because of that particular bill. That's solely background. Nothing to do with procedure.
The only thing I think use some clarification, especially, I just want to make sure I understand it right. IDEA ages 3 to 21 is not a 504 plan and FAPE. And so I was a little confused about or 504 plan in the first paragraph of background.
Gotcha. You're saying that shouldn't be there. Got it.
Yeah.
It would just be those with IEP, MET. So we can remove that. I think it just carried over because on ESA, it actually does allow them in statute to continue on.
Okay. All right. So in statute, this is under, if Diane, under AEP number 7, qualified student A1, having a disability under 504.
That's it. That's straight from ESA statute. That's just to give a background of language.
Okay, and then item 7A2 is 15, so I don't know my sections. Is that special ed?
Child with a disability.
Yeah, that was my question. What does as 30 defined?
I don't know.
That's directly from the statute, honestly.
There's an error from there then.
Okay. So it would require diving into some of the statute. All that's there for is just the verbiage directly out of the statute that applies to this policy.
I think 30 is misplaced. If that ever gets argued legally, anyway. Okay.
I mean, I can certainly double check to make sure we didn't get a typo in there when we cut it from the statute, but we did just copy and paste it straight from the statute.
And then you just probably want to change it to number 2, right? Number 2 next to qualified student?
Sure. No.
Next to qualified student, it says number 7.
No, it does say number 7 because that's the reference exactly from the statute. So what you're seeing is exactly how it's written in statute. These are pieces of the statute that are applicable. So for the first one, that is actually in section 1. And for the second one, it's in section 7. And so if you look at the top, it says the header is qualified student, ARS, and then it gives you the full reference. And then we just pulled out that section.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense now. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. No problem.
Okay. So the other thing, I know we briefly talked about this before as far as this is Alicia. The AEP evaluations are completed annually.
Yes.
So when we're looking at a flat rate, are we looking at the flat rate applying to each annual review, or is there going to be like a different, is that when we fall back on the hourly or
no,
sort of like a...
It's a flat rate for the same review year after year. That's what we discussed the last meeting.
Okay.
Because they're going to be doing the same work year to year. Mm-hmm. And you also may have... You could potentially pick a different teacher or a different psychologist every year. You also, our list could dwindle at the end of the year, and then we would have to do an RFP again. So it is an annual rate of 770 that we're discussing.
Is that something that's feasible by parents as far as that's a big chunk of money coming out of their ESA funds?
I mean, it's required by statute that it's done annually.
Okay.
So I don't know how we could say in year one this set of people did it, and because it's in year two, even though these two different people never touched this case before, you know, it's going to be a brand new review for them that they've never had. So it'd be hard to say for year two you decrease it.
I guess I'm just thinking if I was the same person doing it again, I would really just have to look at the updated piece, and that would be kind of unfair to charge the family the full amount. Is there something in there that they don't necessarily have to get charged that full amount then if we're doing the flat rate?
No, because the parent is still going to have to collect new data for the previous year. So the data they're looking at is everything that's collected from the last year that's just happened. So anything that they reviewed before would have been different data. So I think it would still require a very similar analysis. And again, you kind of have to go back to the incentive to do this if we're decreasing the rate, at how do you decrease it? At what rate do you decrease it? Does it, is it still an incentive for these individuals to do, you know, to do the RFP? If they know that the possible income is going to decrease every year for kids that are, you know, remaining, that decreases the potential that they're going to earn, decreases, you know, their desirability to stay on that list or to even respond to the RFP. So all those things, if we're going that way, you'd have to consider.
Yeah, that makes sense for longevity purposes then. Okay.
And it's kind of what we discussed the last few meetings was that it's going to have to be a planning process. And I know for some parents, they use all of it. They use all their ESA funds and there's nothing left.
Right.
And so some of it might be out of pocket. And then for others, they could plan ahead and save here and there and spend a little differently. But that's going to be something that every parent is going to have to kind of balance to offset the benefit of still continuing to receive the ESA funds. Which is also why we too wanted to keep those rates on the low, like on that average end rather than on the higher end, so that it is still affordable for parents, because we do know that that's been a factor we've considered this entire time, is how do we make it enticing while simultaneously as affordable as possible.
Right.
Just things to
But
consider.
It is also a huge benefit to keep your child in school, so I'm sure it's worth it for a lot of parents if they do have to pay out of pocket. So. Okay. I just wanted to make sure I understood that right. Thank you.
Identified by school district has been section 15 subsection.
This is Diane on page 3. Are we just going section by section?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
On page 3, unless we're going section by section. 3, reviewing AEP for continued eligibility. I'm 3A says they have to have a current AEP not expired prior to July 1, and 5 says determination is made in May, which is sooner than July 1. So I just, that's, you know, fairly sooner. And is that meant to be that way, that they have to, parents have to meet those deadlines? Because if they had one in June, they've got to like plan back to May in order to still be eligible. I don't want to catch people.
Let me clarify that for you. That's not at all what it is. So the AEPs are due to us every year by April 1st. So they would have, the parent would have from July 1 through April 1st to get it done and get it to us. That's most of the year. We'll get those AEPs and we'll evaluate them at the time we're issuing renewal contracts, which are done annually. We issue those contracts in May. So during that time between April and May, while we're issuing renewals, what we're going to look at for that AEP is just to ensure that through June 30th of that year, it is still a current AEP so that we can issue the renewal. So we're just looking to make sure it doesn't expire, that the parent actually did get a new AEP done each year. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, with the department, the AEPs with the department, with ESA department, or
the AEP is the document that is developed by the IET team. That's that independent evaluation team. So once they do that independent evaluation, the AEP is in the document, the report. It's a new report. So I know it's kind of funny because these are all brand new terms that have never existed. So the AEP then becomes the annual evaluation plan. They give that to a parent, similar to the way a parent gets an IET or an IEP or an MET, and then the parent submits that to us. And then we evaluate it and say, okay, they said that this child should continue, so we issue a renewal contract based on that. So it, just like with an IEP or an MET, we're just checking to make sure the AEP is still valid.
Okay.
So meaning if it's going to expire before the next contract year, we cannot issue a contract. That means the parent didn't go get an annual AEP done. Because realistically, it would only be good from the date they got it to that same date the next year, which would be before the next contractor. I know it's kind of fuzzy. But that's really all it is. We're just making sure that it is a current valid document.
Okay.
And then you were right, by the way. Thank you for catching that 30. It was just a typo in 7-2. Everything is correct. The 30 was just when we plopped it in, we must have hit 30. So we're going to just remove that typo from there. Thank you for catching it.
Awesome.
Any other questions? Clarity needed?
I don't know that it's in this document, but what's the process for teams, whether it's a special educator or the psychologist, not performing in a manner timely that a parent, gets their report? And I can't imagine if they're contracted that they would be, you know, falling down on their duty, but I guess things do happen. And is there sort of a overarching someone in the committee or RFPs accepted? What's the vetting process for acceptable providers?
When we write the RFP, we're going to put all the specifications that we want in there, and then we select them obviously based off cost and quality. I did talk to, because I know this question came up last time about, is there like an appeal process? What can we do there? So I talked to our procurement department to get an idea. So we can't put anything that requires an appeal or anything like that in there where you can kind of challenge. And as a department, we can't really get in the middle of the business between you and the vendor that you're choosing. However, RFPs can be done annually. So if we have a couple of scenarios can happen. One, if the entire list dwindles, we would have to do an RFP anyways to get a new list. If we have vendors where we get complaint after complaint after complaint, where we have serious issues with them, then the department can actually have recourse where we can do something with the vendor if they're not fulfilling their duties as a vendor. But that has to be like we've had several complaints from many parents, and then we would handle it that way. And then one thing that, because I know that this is important, you guys obviously want the best of the best, right? So you're going to have this list of people who want to actually provide the most timely service, the best service. So what I've looked at doing is an annual survey of these individuals. So as they continue to stay on, then we can rate them like 4 out of 5 or 3 out of 5 or something like that. So then we'll provide those ratings to parents. So as you're picking from each list, you have the ratings for each person, so you can pick the best ones. That's as far as we can kind of go to help manage the quality of those individuals and to manage, you know, if something else is going on with them. Does that make sense? Any questions?
Yes.
Nope, makes sense to me, Felicia.
Okay. Makes sense to me, Andrea.
Okay. Any other questions or clarity needed for the procedures themselves?
Nope. That's Andrea.
Yeah, no, this is Alicia. I think it's pretty clear.
Me too.
Okay. Diane, did you have any other questions or clarity needed on the procedure specifically?
Nope.
Okay, so I think we'll go ahead and take the vote on the procedures just to make sure everything's mm-hmm. good there.
Okay, Diane, do you approve?
Yes, yeah, so it's the one correction there.
Yes.
Yes.
And and 504 double check.
Yep, we will check that today.
Corinne is no longer on the phone. Kelly is not present. Andrea?
Yes.
And Alicia?
Yes.
Okay, great. So,
okay.
Procedures are good.
Okay. Our procedures are good. So let's do, I want to kind of wrap back around and talk about everything that we voted on today and wrap through, everything we voted on in general, actually, because I think we're getting to the point where these meetings are, unless we want another one, I think we have enough information to actually do the RFP. So since we have some time, I think let's do just I'll walk through a whole recap of everything we decided, if that's okay
Fantastic.
With everyone.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
So I'm going to start with the AEP meeting, the November 15, 2016 notes,
mm-hmm.
and we'll go from there.
Okay.
So if everyone has those in front of them. All right. So student eligibility criteria, factors, IET, the IET team must evaluate to determine if the student should continue to receive the ESA until 22 years of age. They're going to look at the information contained in their most current eligibility documentation, that being the IEP, MET, or evaluation form.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to look at the student's present levels of academic achievement. If you're a homeschool parent, that means self-assessments, reports provided to the team explaining what's been taught, curriculums used, services provided, and their overall progress, anything a parent thinks is important for that team to know, really. If they're in school, in private school, then the school would provide report cards, progress reports, and any information from their teachers regarding that student's progress. And then if you have tutors, for those who do have tutors and therapists and other people who work with your child, they would provide any relevant reports from services that they've given to demonstrate the student's need and progress. Then we move on to C. For those students who can do this, so for applicable students, it would be the student's post-school goals. So ADE will develop a form, and then students will essentially self-report their post-school hopes, dreams, goals, and then share their goals. So for example, if they wanted to go to college, and then allow them the opportunity to demonstrate their pre-readiness. And then, and it's essentially like a self-report of how continuing on the program will help them achieve their goals, okay? So that is the criteria, that is the information that a parent would submit to this team, and that is the information that the team would evaluate. Then administratively, ESA staff and per our procedures will ensure that the student meets 15-24-01-1-2-3, which is the students with the disabilities, and will ensure that the student has not aged out or is not past the age of 22 prior to the upcoming contract year. Okay. And then with the independent evaluation team, the one edit we have had from this discussion is that there would not be a team of two any longer. We will have a list of special education teachers, and we will have a list of clinical and school psychologists, certified school psychologists. So we'll have two separate lists, and parents would pick one SPED teacher and one of the psychologists mm-hmm. of their choice. Let's see. And then the parent would, of course, be part of this whole process, but that would be not paid, obviously. It's just as part of participating in the process. I'm going to skip cost because I'm going to go to that next. I'm going to go straight to process. So the IET, the independent evaluation team, would be responsible for reviewing the student eligibility criteria, so everything we said that the parent had to submit, and with that data produce an AEP report. That's our annual evaluation plan. That report, including the following information, so documentation of the complete review process, including a summary of all the data and documents reviewed, determination of the student's eligibility to continue to receive the ESA funds until age of 22, or for the following, or at least for the next year, the means of communication used, a list of participants involved in the process, so everyone's name and who they are. You'd want to have like date and time of the exit conference with parents, so when all of that was completed, and any other relevant notes from that conference with the parents. So if a parent had feedback or just wanted something in that report, including that information in the report. Then with cost, we voted on option one, which is the flat fee, and that's a SPED teacher at $50 an hour for 7 hours, being a total of $350 for each SPED teacher that's contracted. And then a clinical or licensed school psychologist would be $60 hourly rate with 7 hours, which is a total of $420 per psychologist. And so that is a total to a parent, a total cost of $770. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then if any other data is provided, we can kind of consider that. We might have to come back to meet.
Okay.
If not, that would be the rates we voted to continue with. And then the draft policy and procedure. There was a question in the background in the first paragraph about the 504 plan. So we're going to fact check that. And then there was a typo on page 2 and under 7A2 where the 30 is there, and we're just going to remove that. But otherwise, everyone voted yes for the procedures, yes for the cost options, and yes for the eligibility and the process for the IT team.
Mm-hmm.
So
what are next steps? Just writing up the...
Next steps are really just writing up, the department will need to write up the AEP, essentially like a report from this committee to go over everything that we determined. It'll include background for why we all came together, and then all of the determinations we made. And then the department will also then begin the RFP process. So we'll start developing that RFP.
Okay.
And at this point, those are That's where we're at for next steps.
Okay. Is there going to be a reason to meet again in the near future, or is it still tentative?
Honestly, I don't, unless there's something that you guys want to meet about, I think we've got everything we needed from this committee to do the RFP, and that was the whole point of this, to make these decisions so we could do that and find those vendors. So I think unless there's something something that goes on with the RFP where it isn't effective, I don't personally see a reason why we'd have to pull back together. Mm-hmm. But what are your thoughts?
I don't think we need, this is Diane, I don't think we need to meet. I did have December 13, I think, on my calendar, so I'm going to take that off unless there's...
Yes, we sent it as a tentative date, but yep. And we can keep it still as a tentative just in case, or you can remove it from your calendars. But yes, okay. That was a tentative date. That was our last tentative date.
Mm-hmm. Okay, there should have been one on the 6th and the 13th.
Oh, that's right, the 6th and the 13th.
But that, so if we don't think we need to meet again, my suggestion would be to just cancel those, and then we can pool a meeting together if we need one.
Okay.
That way there's no confusion of, you know, what we need to do or not do. Okay. So is everyone okay with canceling those two dates?
I am. Andrea.
Diane. Alicia, that's fine with me.
Okay.
Diane, yes.
Okay, great. So that's 3 out of 5. Okay. So I'll make sure to send those calendar updates.
And then once the report is prepped, we will get a copy to you all so that you know everything that we discussed is actually in that report, and you'll know exactly how we're moving forward with the RFP.
Okay, so before we conclude the meeting, we do have a public comment. So call to the public. We have Alexa Bloom in attendance here in person, and she is requesting to speak to the committee. So you're welcome to come forward.
Sure,
you may sit.
Okay. So, members of the ESA committee and guests, my name is Alexa Bloom, and I am mother to an ESA student. My son is autistic, has severe sensory processing disorder and auditory processing disorder. Traditional methods used in the public education system, including online schooling, didn't work for my son. The ESA last year finally allowed me to teach him in a way that he could understand. He was learning. However, everything changed this summer. I am now limited to curricula as it is packaged, which is not unlike what he would be using in any school. If this worked for him, I wouldn't need the ESA. My son cannot process what I or a tutor explain to him during lessons. He needs computer games and apps, supplemental activities not specifically required by the curriculum, hands-on projects, etc., to understand the concepts presented to him. He needs to see it. He needs to experience it. He needs to apply it to the world around him. These needs are not simply fun additions to his education. They are his education. So as I watch my son struggle and fall further behind again this year, I implore you to reconsider the limitations that have been placed on the homeschooling families, the families whose children cannot attend a brick-and-mortar school. Please help us help our children by discussing in future meetings ways to define the statutes that are in the best interest of our children. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other public comment? No? Okay, so with that, we will conclude our meeting at 11:21. If you have any questions, please feel free to send me an email, and we will let you know. We will send you the report once it's completed, and we will take off the two tentative dates of December 6th and December 13th. Thank you, everyone, for your participation. It's greatly appreciated.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you for your time. And
thank you. Thank you.
Thank you all. Bye-bye. All right. So,